The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this week, there was a question left in the Google form that I have as a link on the in the invitation for this particular group. So I thought I would start by letting that be the source of reflection, the source of the reflection for the evening, and then we can see if there are questions or comments or conversation that want to come out of that, or another question that might be just here in the room. So the question, I won't read the whole thing, but I'll read pieces of it. I've struggled all my life trying to run or change. The ironic thing is change is the very nature of things. I don't like where I am, who I am, or sometimes my life as a whole. I failed to see until today in meditation that there's not a microsecond that goes by that there are a million changes and shifts every second, from my thoughts to my very cellular structure. So I have been more or less in a delusional state of thought for my entire life. You're not alone. This not understanding the nature of just how impermanent experience is. Most of us live much of our lives without really knowing that. The fluidity of change, the non-permanence of every second has me feeling like I'm standing in sand at ocean's edge where it's quickly eroding and shifting. How can I keep the lesson of an experience of impermanence and still function in everyday life? It almost feels paralyzing. So there's a lot in this question. There's a lot here. And one of the first things, so basically I kind of the big picture of this question to me is understanding the impermanent nature of experience and then how we relate to that and how we live with that understanding. And there are different relationships that we have with that understanding at different times. So I want to speak to that a little bit. You might be interested in exploring in your experience, how is my relationship to impermanence right now? I mean, if there's something difficult happening, something painful is happening, then we're all for impermanence. When that goes away, yes, that's pretty good. When we like what's happening, we're not so fond of impermanence. But the other piece here that just the very first part of the question I want to speak to a little bit. I've been struggling all my life trying to change. The ironic thing is change is the very nature of things. And so this speaks to something in our experience. I think we all find at times there are things we don't like about ourselves or ways that we behave or habits of mind that we follow, and it's hard to change those. The nature of change doesn't make it, that changes the nature of experience doesn't make it easy for us to change our habits. That may sound kind of paradoxical, but there's other forces at work in our minds and in the world, there's other forces in work, and the force of conditioning is very powerful. Now, that force of conditioning operates in the context of change. Conditioning is a phenomenon that is, whatever's arising in this moment, which is, this moment of changing experience, what's arising now is conditioned based on things that have happened in the past. And what arises in the next moment will be conditioned based on what's happened in the past and what's happening now. So it's a forward tumble of experience that is based on, we could call it kind of a pressure or a kind of an energy or a momentum in a particular direction. So if, you know, I did use the analogy of a river a few weeks ago in terms of, you know, the sense of, you know, partly to point to the change, but also to partly point to, you know, what is a river? You know, it's like, or the river is nothing but change, and yet there's a way we identify this is a river. And the, you know, the river itself has a kind of a momentum behind it. You know, the channel that the river flows in has been eroded over years and years, you know, maybe hundreds of years, that channel that the river flows in has been eroded. And so that's a powerful condition that keeps the river kind of flowing in that direction. It's not going to just suddenly, you know, without some condition, it's not going to suddenly like switch course. You know, if there's a big storm and, you know, a mudslide comes down and blocks off the channel, it's going to find a new way. But that's a condition that creates a change there, creates a different flow. So the changing nature of things operates within this kind of natural law of conditioning, let's say. And so this is partly why it's so hard for us to change. You know, the habits of mind that we have, you know, the ways that we are, have been deeply conditioned by how we were raised, by our families, by our cultures, by what the weather is, how, you know, how our bodies are, the genetics of our bodies. So many conditions come in to shape what's happening in this moment and what our relationship to it is. And many of our habits, so for me, you know, I could say, and I've talked about this a lot, a habit of self-hatred in my mind. It might seem funny to call that a habit, but it was, you know, it was the mind had habituated itself to have thoughts of self-negativity. As the Buddha says, you know, whatever we frequently ponder becomes the inclination of the mind. And so this mind had frequently pondered thoughts of, I'm no good, I'm a failure, I can't do things right. And those thoughts being pondered creates conditions. It's like that channel in the river creates conditions for those thoughts to continue. And yet, the kind of the, you'd say the beauty in a way, or the nature of change means that even those very strongly conditioned habits and patterns can change. Different conditions, like the river, you know, if a condition, a new condition happens, there's, you know, an avalanche that comes down and blocks off the channel. That's a new condition. It changes the course of the river. This kind of thing doesn't even have to be as major as an avalanche, although I kind of feel in some ways like the practice of mindfulness was like an avalanche in my being. You know, it really fundamentally, over the course of time, it fundamentally shifted my conditioning. And so, you know, the impermanent nature of experience makes it possible for change to happen. And yet it doesn't just happen kind of like, you know, so one day you get up and decide, okay, like me, you know, it's like I couldn't get up and decide, I'm not gonna hate myself anymore. It was a process of exploring what are the conditions that led to that. What does it feel like when self-hatred is arising? Oh, noticing that self-hatred arising is just a phenomenon in the mind. And then the process of suffering around it has to do with believing that thought. And that belief is also just something that's arising in this moment. So a lot of learning and seeing and kind of using the mindfulness to explore What is the moment-to-moment experience? That seeing that changing experience of a conditioned pattern has an effect that can allow it to transform. And so that's one piece that I just wanted to say, that it's not that there's anything wrong, with any of us when it's hard to change a habit, because the habits are so deeply ingrained. It seems like a paradox that change is the very nature of things, but it's so hard to change these habits. But that power of conditioning is a powerful force. It's so powerful. Mindfulness and being with experience is a power that is stronger than the power of habit. The conditioning nature of being aware of experience, noticing the suffering, seeing how our own mind is participating in its own suffering, that's very powerful conditions to add to experience that fundamentally can reshape our habits and patterns. So that's one piece that I wanted to reflect on. And the next one, the piece around the fluidity of change, of just the sense of every now and then, sometimes it's in deep meditation, sometimes it's just an intuition we get in a moment, a sense that things are changing so at such a deep fundamental level. It feels like we're on quicksand. It's like there's nothing reliable, no place to land, nothing permanent. No place that's stable and reliable in experience. And this description of the standing at the ocean's edge where it's just quickly eroding. It's like the sand is being pulled out. Or if you're, I remember standing at the edge of an ocean one time and a very strong wave with a strong undertow came. And the sand that I was standing on was just sucked out from underneath me. And it was almost like, almost feeling like I was going to get pulled into the water. I almost did, but I could hold on. So I didn't get swept away. But it's got that feeling of like, the very ground we're standing on is just falling out from under us. Sometimes it can have that feeling. So that experience of the unreliability of experience, when we deeply touch into that understanding of impermanence, that sense of the unreliability of experience, and this is what we call, three basic insights that the Buddha pointed to that help the mind to become free from its habitual ways of clinging. And seeing the impermanent nature of experience is one of those things, because as we do see the impermanent nature of experience and understand much more clearly that everything that arises will pass away, there's much less of a movement in the mind to want to hold on to it, because the mind understands there's no point in trying to hold on to it. It's just slipping away. So that one is the first kind of understanding that supports non-clinging, that supports the mind to not try. It's really the insights, these three insights: impermanent, unreliable, uncontrollable. We could anicca, dukkha, anatta, impermanent, suffering, not self. Different ways of saying those insights. The non-clinging that arises as a result of these understandings is kind of because the mind is coming into alignment with the nature of experience. When we take things to be permanent or reliable, we try to hold on to them, and we suffer when we find out that things change, when the changing nature of experience happens and we've been holding on to something, we suffer. And so the kind of the second one, the dukkha, the suffering that comes is in experience is often connected to the impermanent nature of experience. That the suffering, and the word suffering, the second understanding or the second insight, sometimes that's expressed as experience is unreliable rather than experience is suffering. The word dukkha is sometimes translated as inconstancy, unreliability, that the experience itself, you know, what we are experiencing in its impermanent nature, you know, maybe what's arising feels pleasant, so it doesn't feel uncomfortable or painful in any way, and we wouldn't necessarily call that suffering. But the teachings point to no matter what is arising, pleasant or unpleasant, it is not a reliable place for like saying, yep, that's it. I'm going to grab that and keep that and that'll make me happy. Because it's impermanent, it's unreliable. And so that the unreliability is often actually what we are responding to when we have relationships to impermanence that are of like, you know, the sense of fear or anxiety or the sense of, you know, what am I going to do? It's that sense that there's not something reliable. It's more that second understanding that's getting tickled there. You know, that when you're standing at the ocean's edge and it feels like the ground is coming out from underneath you, that's a feeling of there's nowhere solid to be with. It's not reliable standing on this ground. It's not safe. And so it's got that quality of that lack of safety. And so this is a piece of, you know, kind of how do we navigate this in our daily lives? Well, partly one of the things I'll say is that, sometimes the emotional response to the unreliability is, and this is not always true. There are definitely times when the sense of things falling away, the sense of like, you know, we've been living in this year of uncertainty and unreliability. And it's challenging. You know, in daily life, it's challenging to live with that. But sometimes the fear or the anxiety around impermanence is more about the idea of impermanence than it is the actual impermanence. I noticed this on one retreat where I could see that the mind was, it's like the fear around the impermanence, even in a place where you're like really present moment to moment and just seeing everything change really quickly. When I was on a retreat where I was seeing this happen, I was kind of feeling like, you know, there's nothing reliable. There's nothing constant. There's nowhere to land. And at one point I decided, okay, I'm going to just face this fear and see, you know, this impermanence. I want to, you know, kind of know what it is that I'm afraid of. I want to understand that. And what I began to see was that within each moment of experience, when I was right in a moment, there was experience there and it was arising and could be known. And the mind in the moment was afraid of not knowing what the next moment would be. And so the fear was more about the future, the uncertainty of not knowing what the future would be, even if it was a split second into the future, you know, a split second later. You know, it's so, but this often happens in daily life, it often happens in a bigger scale. You know, we have the sense of, like, with you know, this virus and, or, you know, the political situation, it's like, you know, what's going to happen? Well, we don't know. So there's that uncertainty. And, you know, we don't like uncertainty. We like to know what's going to happen. But that uncertainty is something that we can navigate. And actually, you know, the unreliability of experience, the uncertainty, the impermanent nature of experience is something that allows life to be. You know, if everything were static and stable, there wouldn't be any life. Life is inherently change and growth and birth and death. And so, you know, there's a way that maybe we can begin to not just kind of hook to the uncertain side of things, but to recognize that, you know, that that uncertainty also leaves room for something new to happen. Something new can arise. So one of the things I just, in terms of this particular question of how can I keep the lesson of an experience of impermanence and still function in daily life? It feels almost paralyzing. I would say, you know, first of all, you know, the paralyzing feeling is just another feeling that's coming and going. And so, you know, notice what the fear is actually about. Because often the fear that we have, the sense of, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, the fear or the anxiety can be a sense of uncertainty. But the fear is often kind of a projection or an idea about something rather than, and that's kind of what anxiety is too. It's more about the uncertainty of what could happen as opposed to something specific. So that's one thing to kind of be curious about is like, okay, it feels like there's this sense of paralysis, of fear, of not knowing what to do. And what is it in relationship to? What is it actually arising in connection with? Often it's some idea in our minds. The idea that I don't know that's what's going to happen is what's paralyzing, not the actual experience that's unfolding right now. And the other piece of it is, a lot of our lives unfold in a way that feels pretty stable. And that's okay. You know, it's like, we don't know. It is true that it's completely uncertain that, you know, I don't know, some major, like the volcano in Yellowstone maybe could erupt or something, or a meteor could hit the planet like it did like 600 million years ago with the dinosaurs. You know, we don't know that something drastic like that might not happen in the next couple of minutes. But in all likelihood, in the next couple of minutes, we'll still be sitting here together having this conversation. You know, so there's a kind of a way in which things feel stable. And there's a way in which, you know, conditions unfold. And it's like the unfolding of that conditioning has a lawfulness to it. Things, unexpected things can happen, like the COVID virus, you know, kind of changed our lives this year. You know, unexpected things can happen. And in a few days, it can be like, yep, everybody's going home. I was teaching them the March month long. And like within the space of 3 days, we shut down the retreat, sent everybody home right in the middle of the retreat. That was not expected. But largely, you know, so there's this kind of balance of understanding that what's happening is shaped by these lawful conditions, that there is a kind of a little bit of a a little bit of a sense of what probably will unfold, but not clinging to it as that is what's going to unfold. Understanding. So sometimes this understanding about impermanence is more almost almost a reminder in the mind, like, yeah, things are going in this way, but I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to live through this day. How do I want to live knowing that? And for me, this understanding of impermanence, it sounds at the first times we really taste it, touch it, or touch into it, it feels terrifying. But when we start to open to it as the nature of our lives, that I don't know today, you know, this may be my last day on the planet. How do I want to live? How do I want to be? And for me, that understanding of impermanence is actually a beautiful, heartfelt connection with what's here in this moment. And so that's the kind of paradox, maybe we could say, of landing in this moment, knowing the uncertainty, and holding that can create a sense of the poignancy, the beauty and the heartbreak that every moment falls apart. Every moment arises and falls apart. It's both beautiful and heartbreaking, and allows us in a way to live with compassion. That understanding, when we really open to that understanding, our hearts just, you know, that when we understand that our lives are impermanent and changing, we also understand that everyone else is subject to this same heartbreak, and our hearts open in compassion. So the truth of impermanence does have this flavor at times of this like fear and, you know, anxiety and terror, but it also has another quality at times, so a different relationship of taking in the beauty and the compassion that comes with really meeting that truth of impermanence. And it's a journey, you know, it's a journey to get there.